We're ready to go. Hello?
Hello?
Yeah. Okay. Okay. All right. What I'd like to discuss tonight is basically I'm going to get around to it. But I'd like to discuss a problem. It has to do with the class I intended to give anyways. But it's something which is very currently on the lips of everyone since the incident in Oklahoma. And that is, people are asking, the major question people are asking is, how could this happen? Or more specifically, how could God allow this to happen? Then, of course, people ask, what about innocent children? And how could God allow innocent children to die? Okay? Now, this is a question, a very, very powerful question. And, of course, the standard answer is, well, God takes care of them, and that's it. But obviously, they're better off. But obviously, we don't think that people are better off that way. Otherwise, we would do things ourselves in such a manner, which is obviously absurd. So the answer, really, the general answer, obviously, is very lacking and is not satisfying. I would like to tonight attempt to. I won't say answer the question. I will say offer some insight into the question, okay? Now, we have to understand to begin with that the world that we live in is a world that is created by God and runs according to His will. I emphasize it runs according to His will, not according to our fantasies or our designs. However, the world that we live in, God did give us something through which we can have an understanding of how it works. Okay? That is the divine element in our soul, our minds, our intellects, our knowledge, our wisdom. That part of man which has understanding, the divine element, is the tool which God implanted in our soul through which we are capable of gaining knowledge of the world which He created, okay, to a given extent. Never fully, never fully. Man will never fully understand the universe, but man will constantly uncover new ideas as he progresses. But the knowledge is infinite, so he'll never reach an end to it, okay? That is what the Torah teaches us. All right, there was a time when some physicists thought that in a few more years we're going to know the whole universe, and that's it. Newton's time, they thought. Just a matter of complications, we understand everything. And the Torah teaches us that such a time will never come, because the universe is God's, as the prophets say, reflect God's infinite wisdom, and therefore you could never come to an end of it. But nevertheless, at the same time, it says we must study, we must understand the world that God gave us, the natural world of Torah, the world of ideas. That's the world of the human world, and we are obligated to understand this and to apply ourselves to this area. And if we do, we gain more insight into the area. So my answer to this question is going to be based on that kind of an approach. I'm not going to give an answer which is going to be emotionally satisfying to human fantasy. That such an answer is not possible, and such an answer is not true according to Torah. It does not exist. But what I would like to do is show some insight, according to Torah, from the Torah itself, into that kind of a question. And that's a big question that bothers one. Okay. Now, let's go, we just celebrated Passover, so let's just for a moment go to the night of Passover. Okay. Now, there is an interesting question that has very much to do with B'nai Noach, very much to do with it, and that has to do with the basic problem of the religion of B'nai Noach. Of course, you know very well what the most basic problem of the religion of the B'nai Noach is, and what everyone asks as soon as they hear about the religion, the first question they ask is, well, what are we supposed to do? You mean just these seven laws? That's it? Okay, I don't steal, I don't kill, I don't serve idols. Now what? Okay? So the B'nai Noach religion is the only religion in the world, actually, that has no accompanying ritual. There's no ritual in the religion. All right. What does the Ben Noach do? Okay, we know very well that we say the seven laws, these are the seven societal mandates, but the Ben Noach, in terms of perfection, is involved in pursuit of Torah knowledge, studying, understanding, going to classes, learning on one's own, and pursuing Torah knowledge. That's the essence of the religion. It's not a religion of singing hymns. It's not a sing-song religion. It's a religion of knowledge and understanding. Okay, and also, if one wishes to perform a mitzvah on a voluntary basis, one can do so. But there is no mandated ritual. And of course, this strikes everybody as strange. Why? Why is this so? Well, why should God create such a religion? I believe the answer is found in the night of Passover. Okay, right in the Bible we have the answer. You see, you have to understand that for the Torah is as we always say, as the rabbis say, as the Talmud says, and as anyone who is, by the way, I mean the oral law. Is nothing more than a very careful analysis of the written law. And if you look at the written law, you'll find the same principles. And the enemy of Torah is really idolatry and idolatrous practices. Now, what did Moses teach the people? You see, Moses became a teacher for the first time. When did Moses become a teacher for the first time? Not when he went to do the miracles. He was a teacher in a sense, in a certain way, but I mean the official teacher of the people, the teacher of Torah. When did he become a Torah teacher? Okay? He was a philosophical teacher when he went to the elders of Israel and discussed the ideas of God and the name of God. Then he was a philosophical teacher. But when did he become a Torah teacher? He became a Torah teacher for the first time when God told him to teach people that this month is the first of months, and how you set up a halachic calendar, halachic time, and that is found in Exodus 12. And then when he commanded them, he gave them the commandment that on the 10th of this month, once you have a halachic time, so you have day one according to halacha, now on day 10 there's a commandment, and the commandment is to take a sheep and... And he taught them about this sheep, that it was no simple matter. It was to be a specific way, and the certain important concepts, basic concepts, which we will. But the most important thing that he taught them was basically the concept of halacha. All right, and the concept of halacha was the very most and fundamental principle that Moses as a teacher taught the Jewish people that night. It involved certain activities. It involved, in that case, it involved the sheep, it involved the eating, the slaughter, the eating, the matzah, the maror, all the things that we are familiar with, at least everyone is familiar with, and most everyone on a superficial level. But the most important thing that he taught them was the concept of halacha. You see, and which means that what they were going to do on that night, the night of Passover, was not a ritual. It was halacha. Halacha is a different kind of a performance. Very special, very separate. Okay? In halacha, we worship God through the mind, through intelligence, through knowledge, through understanding. It is not ritual performance. You see, now you have to understand, what is ritual performance? Ritual performance is an activity, and every primitive religion has it, activity which has symbolic character, and people think that through this symbolic action, they can effectuate a change in reality. Which means that if they do, people do things symbolically. They think that somehow or other there's some value, and if I do some symbolic kind of action, that's going to affect the change somewhere in reality, somehow. It's going to affect the change that's going to affect my life, okay? That's why you notice the bombing, they said, was on the 19th of April, okay, the bombing in Oklahoma, 19th of April. Why? The 19th of April has symbolic importance. 2 years ago, there was the... the situation with Koresh. And there was also Darkly, it was the Revolutionary War, the Battle of Lexington, I believe it was, when the American Revolution has a historical significance. So the people choose these dates because they have symbolic meaning to them, as if there's some magic about that date, you know, and that's going to effectuate a change, and this is going to be very helpful. But all religions have these kind of symbolic performances where they believe that by doing something symbolically, you can doing an activity that's symbolic in a private way is going to affect the change in the universe, or at least in their environment, okay? Now, this is something which Torah is very much against, and that's really the root of idolatry. And Torah teaches man that the only thing that can effectuate a change is an action that is in line with reason, with wisdom, with knowledge. And what we do is not symbolic performances, what we do is halacha. So the most important thing that Moses taught the people was a removal from any kind of ritual, and he had to teach them for 2 weeks before. The teaching began in the new moon, which was the month of Nisan. So they had 2 weeks time to study all the laws that they were about to perform. And if one studies the Torah very carefully and the oral law, it rules that are really basic concepts, important concepts that relate to these commandments that Moses taught them. So it wasn't just the idea of sprinkling blood on the doorpost. It was very important halachic material to be found in this area. This was the first teaching area of Torah. So from Exodus 12, you see, and the succeeding, the entire Exodus 12 contains some of the most fundamental principles of halacha. I'm not going to be able to get to them tonight, probably, but I think it's important that you should understand that the most important thing was for Moses to teach the people that what they're about to do is not some kind of a ritual. The ritual is, God does not want ritual, because ritual is man's attempt to escape into a world of fantasy and imagination and to think that by doing some kind of crazy symbolic action, he's effectuating a change in reality. That's Egypt. That was the concept of Egypt. The mystical religions and the belief that by a person's concentration of energy in his thought, and somehow he has some kind of omnipotence where he can affect reality. This is the primitive religion of man, and Moses taught the people that such an idea is false, but there is a proper way to worship God. That is through a unique instrument, the instrument of halacha, and he had to teach them all about that instrument of halacha and how it works, what the concepts are, and how man can truly serve God. Now, this is expressed, by the way, by the Talmud, and of course, again, the Talmud, and I always emphasize this, or re-emphasize this, the Talmud is always an explanation of the written law, and everything always has a source in the written law, the text itself. Okay? Now, Talmud explains it, the Talmud cites this concept. Its citation is related to Exodus 12:21. Okay? And it says, the verse reads as follows. And Moses called the elders of Israel. The elders of Israel always means the intelligent ones of Israel, the leaders of the people. And it says, and he said to them. And then it says that what did he say to them? So he said to them, just give me 1 second. See, the next word is never to be found in other situations, you see? In other words, what it should say, the next word basically is redundant. What the Torah should have said, and he said to them, take for you a sheep for your families. Okay? But there is a word before that, which means to pull. All right? To draw, to pull. Okay? And this really doesn't have any place in this context. Whenever the Torah says, for instance, to take a lulav and esrog, it doesn't use that word mishlu. It just says take. So you have a word over here in the Torah which is redundant, okay? Which is unnecessary and just doesn't belong in the text, okay? So whenever we have that, the oral law, always operating on the principle received at Sinai, namely that there are no extra words in the Torah, and that the Torah is God's infinite wisdom, so therefore this word is not extra, but this word actually has meaning, okay? Now, what is the meaning of the word pull, to draw? So the rabbis say what it means is you should pull yourself away from idolatry and take the sheep of mitzvah, okay? So when Moses gave them this law, this is where the rabbis say that the reference is to be found in the careful analysis of the text of the written law, because there are no extra words in the written law, and when it says one should draw, pull, it means withdraw from idolatry and take the sheep of mitzvah. What does it mean? It means Moses was going to teach the people a new way of a new kind of religion, okay? This religion is based upon mitzvah, the concept of mitzvah, what mitzvah is, and what the ramifications and the understanding of the institution of mitzvah is, and he was going to pull them away from their ritualistic inclinations, which they were involved in, because they were involved, deeply involved in Egyptian society, okay? So, therefore, what Moses taught the people that night, basically, I mean for that night, was the concept of halacha. And as I said before, there are many important principles, which perhaps we will go into, but not right away. I would like to get philosophical a little bit tonight before we get back to that. But there are very important principles in that chapter, basic principles of halacha, positive commandments, negative commandments, the different concepts of the types of commandments, and perhaps we'll get back to it. But at this point, let's just keep that in mind, and let me just take up something else. Okay, of course, every mitzvah, every commandment in the Torah is structured according to a very unique method and a science. Actually, it's a science of halacha, but that's every halacha. Certain when a person is proficient in the knowledge of halacha, there is a cohesive system. It's a way of thinking. It's just like a mathematician has a way of thinking mathematically. There's a way of thinking halachically, and it's a unique science of its own. That's true with regard to every mitzvah, but then the question always is the details of the mitzvah. For instance, why? Why did the Torah say, why did God say to sacrifice the Paschal lamb? Okay? Why did God say to sprinkle the blood with the hyssop grass? What's the reason for that? Okay? This is already not the halacha, but the philosophy behind it. So you always have two aspects. You have the structure, which is like the scientific component of it, the way it's structured. Then there is the meta halacha, which would be like the philosophy of science. You have science, you have the way science works, but then there's much work on the philosophy of science. Man isn't happy just to know how things work mechanically. He wants to understand why a little further beyond that, and that's why you have many books written on the philosophy of science. Scientists, after they study science, they want to know what's the philosophy of science. And there are various philosophies that are expressed by different scientists, expounded by different scientists. So there's always the system is what's behind the system. And the same thing is true with halacha. There is the halacha, the science of halacha, and then there is the philosophy behind halacha. Now, Maimonides is gives us some of the... he has a section in his work where he explains the divine commandments. And I'm just going to go into it a little bit, all right? What is the reason for the Passover lamb? So he says as follows. And this is in chapter 46 in his third book, okay? And he says, the reason of the particular laws concerning the Passover lamb is clear. It was eaten roasted by the fire in one house and without breaking the bones thereof. Okay? That's in Exodus 12, all right? In the same way as the Israelites were commanded to eat unleavened bread because they could prepare it hastily, so they were commanded for the sake of haste to roast the lamb because there was not sufficient time to boil it or to prepare other food. Even the lamb was by breaking the bones and to extract their marrow was prohibited. The one principle is laid down for all these rules. When the Torah says, ye shall eat it in haste, okay? And he continues, but when haste is necessary, the bones cannot be broken, nor parts of it sent from house to house. For the company could not wait with their meal till he returned. Such things would lead to laxity and delay. While the object of these rules was to make a show of the hurry and haste in order that none should be too late to leave Egypt with the main body of the people and thus exposed to the attacks of the evil designs of the enemy. Okay? So these temporary commandments were then made permanent, you know, some of them, in order that we may remember what was done in those days. As it says, and thou shalt keep this ordinance in his season from year to year. Okay. And he goes and he continues to go on and on. But the main concept that he says here, which is that the night of Passover, the people had to eat the lamb in haste. So therefore, you couldn't waste time breaking the bones. You couldn't allow people to sit around and suck on the marrow of bones. And you couldn't boil it. Cooking could be a long process. It had to be roasted, which is quick. He said, this is all done, my mind, he says, to reflect the idea of haste so that the people, when they should always be aware of that concept. So when they left Egypt, they should leave all together and not have people, stragglers, which would be exposed to the enemy, to the attacks of the enemy. Okay, which is a very practical kind of explanation. Now, I want to tell you in general that most people are always very unhappy with Maimonides' explanations, because Maimonides' explanations are always practical. Okay, they're all practical. For instance, and he does not, as a general rule, he does not resort to any kind of symbolic interpretation. Okay, as a matter of fact. He says, and when he cannot find a reason, Maimonides just says he does not know the reason. All right, he does not force any kind of symbolic reasoning into his explanation. For instance, with regard to the hyssop grass and the sprinkling of the blood, he says he admits he does not know. He says. To this day, he says it somewhere else. This is with regard to the in another chapter here. But he says that he doesn't. Why he has not been able to find the reason for This is in chapter 47. Okay. Towards the end, he says when he speaks about leprosy, he says. I do not know at present the reason of any of these things, nor why cedar wood, hyssop, and scarlet were used in the sacrifice of the red heifer, nor why a bundle of hyssop was commanded for the sprinkling of the blood of the Passover lamb. I cannot find any principle upon which to found an explanation why these particular things have been chosen. Now, you understand Maimonides was a great genius, and he could very quickly come up with certain symbolic meanings. But Maimonides was not happy with symbolic explanation. He was only happy when he had a practical explanation. And most people are very disturbed with Maimonides' reasoning for the commandments, because they feel commandments have to be something more than just practical. Is that the whole thing? You mean the whole reason is that they had to leave in haste? Okay, so why they? What's the concept over here? There must be some intrinsic value in this activity in the mitzvah more than just haste. Okay, and I'd like to explain what Maimonides' position is. You see, Maimonides maintains, again, as the Talmud states, that the whole Torah is a tirade against idolatry and against primitive symbolic kind of performances where man thinks that he can just withdraw into his mind, do certain actions in private, and effectuate changes in reality. This is imagination, and this is an escape from reality. And that's what, in general, religions are. The Torah taught man something different. The Torah wanted to teach man that he must recognize reality. On the contrary, the purpose of the mitzvahs, of the commandments, one of the main purposes behind the commandment was to teach the people not to be like the Egyptians and to spend their lives in imagination and thinking what's going to happen to them when they're buried in a big tomb in the afterlife, or to get involved in all kinds of crazy activities which they think are affecting changes in reality and the symbolic kind of the symbolic meaning. The Torah wanted to teach man to respect reality, to recognize that reality that we have is part of God's world that he created for us. He wants us to live in this reality. And we're not here by accident. We're here by design, God's design. So God wants man to live a life in conformity with those principles of reality that he has created for it. Okay? So religion, the Egyptian religion, was a religion that was based upon man's attempt to escape from reality and to have a life that's in line with what he imagines is good and what he wants. His emotions tell him that this is what he wants. How does he get it? He can't get it. He sees there are problems. So he escapes, and he thinks that by doing certain things, he's going to accomplish a world at a different world order, one that's in conformity with his imagination. But the Torah is just the opposite. The Torah teaches man to face reality and to realize that God wants man to live in this reality, and don't try to escape it, but you have to, on the contrary, your mission in life is to live with knowledge and reason and to understand and to operate and to function according to the intelligence, according to the divine element that God has implanted in the human soul. It's exactly the opposite, in other words. That is really the secret. That's really the idea behind all of Maimonides' explanation. According to Maimonides, that is the most vital message and the very unique message of Torah. That's why, according to Maimonides, halacha, the institution of halacha, and of course, you know, Maimonides was the finest of the Baalei Halacha, the greatest, and according to his whole work of his whole Yad HaChazaka, is a masterpiece of halacha. So he knew very well what halacha was, and he knew very well, he understood the institution of halacha, and that's why he had a right, you know, to be a philosopher in Torah. You have to have knowledge. You can't just be, problem is people try to philosophize and they don't even know what halacha is. Maimonides has a right to philosophize because he was a master of the Talmud and the whole system of halacha. And what he was saying was that the halacha basically reflects a conformity to reality. That's